yad and whatsoever. Katam topics. Bhagavata, about the personality of Godhead. Kataniya, word to be spoken by me. Guru Karamana, of him who acts wonderfully. Guna, transcendental qualities. Karama, uncommon deeds. Ashraya, involvement. Undihi, by persons. Samseya, ought to be heard. Ta, all of them. Bhubhushubihi, by those who want their own welfare. Translation. Those who are desirous of achieving complete perfection in life must submissively hear all topics that are connected with the transcendental activities and qualities of the personality of Godhead, who acts wonderfully. Purport. The systematic hearing of the transcendental activities, qualities, and names of Lord Shri Krishna pushes one towards eternal life. Systematic hearing means knowing him gradually in truth and fact. And this knowing him in truth and fact means attaining eternal life, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita. Such transcendental glorified activities of Lord Shri Krishna are the prescribed remedy for counteracting the process of birth, death, old age, and disease, which are considered to be material awards for the conditioned living being. The culmination of such a perfectional stage of life is the goal of human life, the attainment of transcendental bliss. So your important point is coming out, is qualities. The Lord has qualities and he performs activities. So this topic is that of Abhideya. We're attracted to the Lord. There are those, they have love for the Lord. But the inspiration is the qualities and activities. Right? Quality then has to be applied. Right? We see that it comes up here in both things, the qualities, all topics, transcendental activities and qualities of the Lord, and then gradually knowing him in truth and fact. And so Prabhupada is going out of the way to bring this point out, that the qualities of the Lord that are therefore applied in pastime is what's important. Right? This chapter, then we see, brings out what happens if there's not good quality. Right? Activity is there, but quality is not good. Right? The son of the Brahman is powerful. He's able to curse. That means he has potency. He's not just some little street kid. He's a bona fide Brahman. But no character. Right? He's powerful. Therefore he's dangerous. So because of criticizing the devotees, then misunderstanding the intent of devotees, therefore there's trouble. Right? It's a very important element. Misunderstanding is a big, big problem. Therefore, knowing him in truth and fact, knowing the Lord in truth, means without any misunderstandings or misgivings. Right? Because these misunderstandings, misgivings, they are the basis of problems. Right? Why someone is doing something, what is their purpose, what is their motive. It may be the detail of it is very different. Right? It means you take one object and tell 10 people to describe it. Right? We take this blackboard maybe and tell you're going around the room, say, describe this. Someone will say, oh, you know, this is the board that we use for the bottoms-up class. Someone else will go into the quality of the letters. Well, here the person who's writing very carefully can see the lines on the side where they're trying to get it exact and straight. They're very, very careful about that. Someone else may say, wow, look at this board. The corners of it are really eaten away. Can't they do something better than this for a class for Bhagavatam? Does that make sense? So this is the point. Is that what someone perceives of the same object is different. Unfortunately, we always think everybody thinks the same way we do. You know? But it's not like that. Each jiva is unique. There's no one jiva that's the same as another. It's not like that. Right? Means in quality they're the same. They're all Satchitananda. They all naturally have love for Krishna. But as far as their perception goes, as unlimited there are of jivas, there's that many unlimited viewpoints, that many perspectives. Right? So, it's something we need to adjust with, to get used to, that others do think different, are going to be different, and therefore, when they say something or do something, if we did that, it would mean this. But if they do that, it doesn't necessarily mean that. One can try it. So next time something annoys you that someone does, ask them, why did they do it? What did they mean by it? And you'll probably find it's a very good explanation. Maybe bogus, but it'll be a good explanation. it'll be like that. You know what I'm saying? That's the thing, is that so because of this, then so much trouble comes up. We have such a great king as Pradipit Maharaj, and he's there to establish religious principles. Right? It's his business to see that everybody is performing their duties properly. Right? He'll come. The Rishi is in trance. He doesn't know this Rishi. So that he could come with an army, right? He goes out hunting, they don't go out alone, right? They go out with a whole army, and their chariots make a lot of noise. I mean, a lot of noise. Right? The more noise it makes, the better the chariot is considered, right? Many times you see in Mahabharata that Arjuna would get into a chariot, and he'd drive it around, and the rattling of the wheels would make him happy, you know? It makes lots of noise. So they're this design that they all, because if they make noise, it disturbs the other person, right? If you're fighting, everything's peaceful, they can focus. But if there's lots of noise, it's only those who are really focused too, right? You see modern martial arts, they're in a peaceful, quiet place, right? It's never like in the middle of the street in New York, right? It's always some back alley, quiet, pin drop silence. They stand there, they meditate. They take their stance, and then there's some, they start moving, right? But the point is by sound, immediately you throw the other person off. It's noisy, it's distracting, it's annoying. Then, unless they're very good, like Arjuna and these other great Maharatis, others can't focus during that noise. Does that make sense? Only very qualified people. Now, he rides up to this ashram in his chariot with all these other people. It's a lot of noise. So, he's not expecting to find such a sage that can meditate so deeply that he doesn't hear all that. And the king's coming in, announcing himself. He's not going to walk in, right? It's a disease of the modern culture sometimes, that they just walk in. No, you always knock, make noise. That's the tradition, right? In cultured families, even when the men walk in their own house, with their own women, walk into a place where the women are, they always make a noise. They cough, they do something that's familiar. It's just culture, it's etiquette. Let alone the king walking into, you know, the sage's place, he's going to announce himself. He's not going to just walk in. It's not pride, it's so that you know who's coming, how to react, what to do. It's the culture. The sage doesn't react. So he thinks he's just pretending because, hey, he's a simple sage living in his ashram. He's got nothing. Suddenly the king rolls up with all his entourage. Right? According to etiquette, he's supposed to do something for all of them. Right? At least offer some water to all his men. Right? So maybe the water is not close by, it's far away, he's got to bring it, you know, like that. So many considerations. So the king is thinking, oh, he's just thinking it's too much trouble, so therefore, being a Brahmin, he's feigning that he's doing meditation, right? So then he leaves the snake around his neck. Because it's his business to see that the Brahmins are doing what they're supposed to be doing. They're doing what they're supposed to be doing, no problem. If they're not, it's his business to say something. So like this. Now his son completely misinterprets this. So the motive of the king was proper, though the activity itself maybe had something to be desired. He could have just, you know, given the Brahmin the benefit and walked out. Right? But being a Kshatriya, you don't do anything a little bit. Right? If you're hunting, you don't stop every, you know, 20 minutes, half hour for tea and biscuits and, you know, all these nice things and bring out the table and, right? I've seen pictures, actual photographs of, you know, some of the English aristocracy in Africa, like in the Congo. They're out in the middle of the jungle and they have this big, huge, monstrous wooden, you know, English dinner table that they're sitting at and having their 4 o'clock tea. You know, with all the pith helmets on and everything, and they got all the natives there, right? So many natives just carry the table for them, right? So it's pretty wild. So they're not like that. They just go. And they hunt and hunt and travel and this until they can't do it 1 second more, right? This is motive passion, right? Why you would not endeavor when you could. So you only stop when you can't. So that's how thirsty he is, right? And he's an emperor, and he's able to handle a lot, right? I mean, in the womb of his mother, he was burnt to ashes, right? So, you know, now he's back. So he's strong, right? So now he is that thirsty. So you combine the religious principles of this Brahmin is supposed to receive him and take care, and him being that thirsty, okay, he makes a mistake, he puts a snake around his neck, big deal, like that. So the father just sees that, hey, he's a Kshatriya, he's frustrated, he makes a mistake, right? And the king is thinking, okay, he doesn't want to entertain us, okay, we'll go away. But we'll just leave a little something so he knows we were here. Right? That's the difference between the goodness and the passion. Passion has, you have to, something has to be there. It's not pure, right? When you smelt metals, you get slag, right? So in the Kshatriyas, there's always some of that. They can't just leave it, right? That's their weakness. For Brahmins, it's clean. They can forgive anything, right? Vishwamitra forgave Vishishta forgave Vishwamitra for killing his 100 sons. I mean, that's tough. Right? 100, right? We have enough trouble with 1 or 2 or 3, right? You know, he had 100 sons, right? And these are all qualified Brahmins. They're not just ordinary kids, so very attached. But he forgave him. So the kings can't. So this kind of situation, we can see things may happen. The Brahmin had a very good answer. I was in meditation so deep I didn't even notice. And we can see that he was, because when he came out and he understood what happened, the snake's there, oh, big deal, what's it? You know, these things happen, he is upset, I should have taken care of it. Right? And the king afterwards is thinking, oh, I'm so foolish, you know, nice Brahmin, and I'm acting like this due to my, due to thirst, you know, due to, you know, the senses. So then it works, right? The king is feeling remorseful. You know, the Brahmin sees, okay, you know, these things happen. Life goes on. But if we try to bring out, you know, establish that justice, oh, hey, I'm not letting this one go. This time I'm going to make it happen. The other person is going to know what I feel. And you'll find that time's the worst day. Does that make sense? If you just let it go, okay, these things happen. But if you hold on to it, no, they've done this too many times to me, I've got to stop this, I've got to... And you'll find, one, you never establish anything, you're the one that ends up saying, I'm sorry anyway. And you've wasted the whole day and annoyed everybody all day. Right? Because forgiveness is a natural quality of the devotee. Right? So it doesn't work. You can try it, but... You know, it won't work. So here, then, it's the activity that's important. Situations, as we said, are going to be always different. How everybody's going to react in the situation is going to be different. But what's important is the good qualities and the application of those good qualities. Right? That's what's important. Because in one situation, different things will happen. Does that make sense? The same situation, you're going to have different things going on like that. So that's not a problem. So the process then is by systematic hearing. Then we can overcome all these difficulties of the age of Kali. Right? That's the thing. By becoming a devotee, by hearing the Lord's name, form, qualities, and pastimes, and that of the devotees, seeing them as non-different, right? Because the Lord doesn't see them as different. We tend to see them as different, right? It's like the Son sees there's Him and there's the Father. But the Father doesn't really see the difference between Himself and the Son. Right? That's just the way the psychology works. That's because that's the way Krishna sees it. Everything is Him, so He doesn't really see the difference. Right? We're separated. We're individual entities. And we see the difference. Right? Does that make sense? So the tendency is to also see the difference in all kinds of spiritual things. So one of them being the difference between the stories about the Lord and the Lord's devotees. Right? But the Lord doesn't see the difference. They're all transcendental. Because the devotee is always involved with the Lord, the Lord's always involved with the devotees. You can't separate. You can't. It's just not. So by hearing that, one goes towards eternal life. And then this means first we know the Lord in truth, then we know the Lord in fact. Right? So here's also an interesting point. Truth means knowledge. Right? But no realization. Fact means realization. So truth means jnana, fact means vijnana. Right? Prabhupada very cleverly here has used truth and fact to mean this, rather than again and again using the same Sanskrit terms and sounding very academic and very Gaudiya and, you know, all those things that are great for a few years, and then you get, you know, been there, done that, then you want to move on to something, you know, some new fad, okay, you know, like that. Does that make some sense? So very cleverly is used this truth and fact. This also then means these words have a lot of meaning. Fact means it's real. Real means you've realized the Lord, so its connection with the Lord, that is its realness. If it's not connected to the Lord, it's not fact. Does that make sense? Statistics are not facts. Your perception of things are not facts unless it's connected to the Lord. Statistics, if they're connected to the Lord, then they can be, if you realize that, they're fact. If it's not, it's truth. Right? So this is, in the Vedic, there's three branches of knowledge. You have paravidya, means transcendental, apara, which means mundane knowledge connected to the Lord, and avidya means knowledge not connected with the Lord. Interesting point to note is aparavidya means the mundane knowledge connected to the Lord, and avidya are the exact same knowledge. Right? Means Bhagavatam or Vedanta, that's paravidya. Bhagavad Gita, that's paravidya. Right? But now Mahabharata is opera vidya. Right? Now we read Mahabharata, we see the Pandavas. Right? And the Lord. So that makes it opera vidya. Does that make sense? Others see it as codes of morality and religious principles and, you know, varnashram. That's avidya. Right? So avidya does not have to be disgusting, karmi, rascal nonsense knowledge. No, the Vedic literatures not used for Krishna is called avidya, let alone Western knowledge. Right? A startling fact, because we feel very safe. If it's Vedic, it's fine. But if it's not connected to Krishna, Vedic is also nonsense. High-grade nonsense, nonetheless. But nonsense. Right? So if it's connected to the Lord, it's truth. Right? And you have an intellectual understanding of it. Fact means you've realized this connection with the Lord. You see the Lord in it factually. Right? That's fact. So the Bhagavatam has different definitions of terms. And it doesn't matter if it's English or not. That's irrelevant. It's secondary. English happens to be the medium we're using here. Language is language. That's an important thing to know. English does not stand on its own as something special. It is a derivative of language. Does that make sense? Language is the communication between the Lord and His devotees. Right? That's language. Then you have derivations of that here, or reflections of that in the material world. We know them as Sanskrit, Brajbhasa, like this. Over there it's the same thing, but here it can be used either in connection with the Lord, which is makes it apara vidya, right? Or not in connection with the Lord, makes it avidya. Then you have derivatives of Sanskrit and Brajavasa and Bengali, right? They speak Bengali in the spiritual world also. Right? So language, so anything that around in this place, the material world, what is being spoken is derivatives of these languages, of actual language. Or, like, say, the reflection of the actual language. Does this make sense? Didn't get too metaphysical here, too technical. Does this make some sense, what we're trying to say? So that means you can express, though in more difficulty, in real language, it's much easier to explain spiritual truths and sentiments and actually anything. And these derivatives of the actual language, depending upon what is important for that particular group of persons at that time and place, they'll have developed that aspect of the language. And what's not, they won't. Right? Let's say Gaelic. Right, the Irish, they have 40 different unique words for 40 different shades of green that any good farmer can identify. Does that make sense? Because farming is important to them. Right? Especially particularly potatoes. But so they're growing, and so therefore all these different shades have meaning to them. Right? Because if it's a little less green, a little more, something's wrong. You know, or if it's brown, definitely there's some problem, unless it's the potato itself. But if the plant looks brown, you got a problem. And the potato looks green, then you really got a problem. Right? So, it's important to them. Right? English has so many, you know, fine details within business and economics and justice and like this. Certain aspects, love. You got to find very few words necessarily in other aspects, but in that, very great. Chivalry, conjugal, very nice, many words. I've been told that in Chinese, they don't have a word for God, because God just is not, important. Right? Means you have gods, like demigods, but you don't have the concept of a single, you know, supreme God, and there's a title for it. They have things meaning that the supreme and higher and this and that. The concept of something more elevated, more powerful is there, but that you can nail down a monotheistic God that they don't have a term for. Right? They get to it. And they infer it, but they don't have it. Does this make some sense? So they'll develop it nicely accordingly, but actual language, any aspect that is of human interest can be described. Right? So this is Prabhupada's expertise, is he knows language. Therefore, he uses English sometimes in a unique way. Even sometimes devotees think it's not good English. But actually, it's damn good language. And English just happens to be a not-so-great language for expressing things. So, therefore, Prabhupada has to take liberties to try to express something that English is really inept at. Does this make some sense? So sometimes this happens. You know, therefore, you know, these things come up. So we should appreciate here the difference of truth and fact, because here, truth does not necessarily mean fact. Right? Sometimes it's also a point of contention, is quote-unquote the truth. Right? Everyone wants to get to the truth these days. But until it becomes fact, it's just intellectual. It doesn't really have any meaning. And if that truth is not connected to Krishna, then it's actually taking you away from Krishna. Right? If it's just moral, if it's just economic justice, you know, be good, be nice, then just, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going, it's, I'd say, if you're on a lower platform, it's taking you towards Krishna in that it's one path. Right? And if you're less, if you're immoral, going towards immoral takes you towards Krishna. But it stops there. Krishna is down the line after religious principles, liberation, and factual liberation, and then prema. That's kind of where Krishna is. It's a long way. Does this make sense? So to gain from this chapter is, just because it seemingly is truth or right, doesn't make it fact. Right? Otherwise, how is it Sringi, you know, somehow another cursed Maharaj Parikshit? Right? Means he made a mistake and cursed probably one of the greatest kings the earth has ever known. Right? They all have him. Parikshit is always there. Parikshit's there. Yudhishthira, Arjuna, the Pandavas are always there. Right? Then you'll go back. Yayati's always there. You know, like this. There's a handful of great kings. Everybody else is good. But these guys are great. And he's cursing him. Does this make sense? If you add it all up, it looks fine. But it didn't make it. Didn't work. And for all of his truth and establishing righteousness, all he did was usher in the age of Kali. Right? That's all. So that is important to know, is truth and fact are different. And here, truth and fact are being connected to the Lord. Let alone so-called truth, in fact, not connected to the Lord, it actually has no value. It's a tool of Kali. Right? He used it to advantage of the Brahmin boy, and he'll use it to advantage on anyone else. Right? So that's the point. Okay. That's this point that I made. The real point Prabhupada is trying to make is that if you regularly hear and chant the Lord's glories, one will be freed from all the effects of Kali Yuga, And one will, in this way, perfect human life by knowing Krishna in fact. That means realization. That means you'll come to the point of prema. Right? Like that. Okay, any questions or comments? Yes.
Does realization come automatically by
hearing? That's a very good question. We're here because we're hearing all about the activities and qualities. So in the chit potency, activity is half. Right? Half is knowledge, half is application. So what knowledge we hear, we apply. But by regularly hearing Bhagavatam and hearing the transcendental pastimes of the Lord, you know, sincerely, then that purification will come that we will naturally be inclined to apply it. But we do have to make the endeavor, right? It means when Prabhupada says automatic, that by chanting it's automatic, means that automatically the Lord's name, form, qualities, pastimes will purify us of all sinful activities. That will bring us to the Tathasta platform. Right? So automatically you'll be liberated. But you have to make the endeavor, have the desire to develop prema. Does that make sense? So if that desire is there, and you're making whatever you can endeavor, then automatically you'll get prema. But there has to be endeavor. That's why Prabhupada always makes pot shots at armchair speculators. Right? Very intelligent. I mean, if you meet some of these top academics, they are so intelligent. I mean, they're gifted, how intelligent they are. You know, just how what they can perceive in things and see. You can explain something to them and they can see many, many layers, and they already start to get down to very practical things. They're very clever, very funny. You know, you can connect so many interesting things together that you'd never think of and make it into a joke or make it serious. But it's all misdirected because they don't apply it. You know what I'm saying? They just don't apply it. So this is the weakness. At the same time as just having great sentiment, you know, and applying things but not having the knowledge what you're doing, in one sense is better because you're active, you're doing something. But at the same time, there's no guarantee you'll continue. How often do we see the really sentimental, very devotional person that has no brain maintains Krishna consciousness? Right? They're not using their intelligence, therefore they don't really know why they're doing it. Then if someone else comes along and says something different, you know, hey, you're restricting yourself, you know, therefore you're an anxiety and you should, you know, let it go. Why you, you know, disturb yourself by so many restrictions? And they're out the door. Rather than, no, restrictions create elevation. You know, letting it go creates degradation. I'm on this path of elevation, not for degradation. I was on the path of degradation before I came to Krishna consciousness. It didn't work. That's why I became a devotee. I was frustrated. I was looking for answers. It just didn't work. So now I came to Krishna consciousness, started the process, it's working. So if there's some frustration, it may be because I'm not applying it properly. Not that there's some problem with restriction. You understand? That's intelligence. Like that. So the combination is what you're looking for. Buddhi yoga means you're intelligent and you apply it. And there's no specific measure for that intelligence and endeavor. You know what I'm saying? It's individual. How intelligent you are, you use that much, that's perfect. Someone's 10 times more intelligent for you, you'll just say, you have the intelligent quotient of, let's say, 1. Right? And you're using that 1. Someone else is 10 times more intelligent than you and they're using 9. You're actually better than them.
Because they're not fully, if they're using 10, then you're equal. But 10 being used or 1 being used, it doesn't matter. Because the point Krishna sees is body, mind, and words is fully engaged. So if your emotions, your intelligence, your endeavor is fully absorbed, that's perfection. Therefore, the simplest person can attain perfection, or the most sophisticated person can attain perfection. And the process is no different. Someone who has a conditioned nature to do something big and special then has to do something big and special, otherwise they're not fully engaged. And someone who can just do a small part, if they're doing that, they're fully engaged, they're perfect. Right? Therefore, this, you know, so many stories in the Vedic literatures of great things and simple things. Right? So that's the whole point. Does that make sense? Is the two go together? Chit potency means the two would go together. Intelligence and activity. And the jivas are expanded from the chit potency. Therefore, we have to apply our intelligence and be active. That's right, Buddha Yoga is for us. It's not for the internal potency. Internal potency for them, the process is prema. Right? The process for us is Buddha Yoga until we get to the point of being in the fire of prema. Right? Okay. Does that make sense? Yeah, one second.
Maybe for not knowing quite how to formulate this question in regards to the answer. When you use the word automatic, if I've been responding to, there would have been some concept of mercy involved in the answer. Or if I just sit on the top where you could follow all 64 items perfectly, may not get the word.
Oh, you mean just on that aspect? Okay, so Prabhu is mentioning that if he was answering this question, he would have brought out, I use the term automatic, he would have used something more personal, like mercy and those things. You're following, you're trying to follow the 64 items of devotional service, you can't, but you're doing your best. The Lord and the devotees are pleased, you are elevated anyway. Two things. One is, this is the principle of vichara. Vichara means looking at a particular item from many different perspectives. So, lately we tend to give more metaphysical or more technical answers or analyzation of things. A little dry. But before I would give much more sweet answers. And then I would find is that it would be nice in the class and then they go out and be ogres. And the other thing is just seeing the huge, or to me, like overwhelming lack of faith in Prabhupada's instructions and the Vedic literatures, that it's not right, and something modern has a better angle on life than God and the Acharyas. So trying to fill the gap, bridge that gap, we've been explaining things very technically so that it logically makes sense, because there's this idea that the Western culture has the monopoly on logic and practicalness, right? The concept of the pragmatic minimalist is coming from the, how you say, the bourgeois. It's a Vaishya concept. And the Western culture is very Vaishya-oriented. If there's any one thing you could say about, let's say, American and that culture, it would be Vaishya, right? Business is the thing. You've made it if you do well in business, you know. Some of the European cultures, there's a little bit more of the Kshatriya aspect. You know, you have to go way back to the Egyptians and some others, and the Vedic to find Brahminical to be prominent.
So they somehow or another feel that they have cornered the market on being practical. And I constantly hear devotees just write off anything to do that's Vedic because it's not practical, because their lack of ability to think about it or apply it or make any endeavor, right? If it has to do with money, you'll make 10 endeavors until you get it right. But when it comes to something Vedic, if it doesn't work the first time off, it's bogus. So kind of being pained at that when we've overly pained audiences with very technical answers to try to show that, well, nothing is at least very logical in that. Unfortunately, we're finding that doesn't work either. So we're still not getting the right result. Because then we have people that have heard in the class, think they understand, but when they go to apply it, they can make just as big a mess as they did before. But before they made it out of sentiment, now they make it with misdirected intelligence. So, you know, it'd take me a while to work on some new approach. Like that. But the element, so therefore it's just the difference. Both are proper. The automatic, therefore, yes, the thing is that if you are endeavoring to the best of your ability, it's automatic that the Lord and His devotees are going to take you back to Godhead. It's a very important aspect. Many devotees, out of not knowing this, having the faith in it, actually they use, I guess it would come up, because here we don't, how you say, though we live right here, we're surrounded by the various branches of the Gaudiya mission, we don't hear boo from them, right? And if you leave here and go out to the west, then you probably hear more about the Gaudiyas than we do. So it is one of the lines that the Gaudiyas will use against us, is that it's not automatic. You have to make the endeavor for these higher levels of Krishna consciousness. And then only you'll get. But notice here the very interesting twist. We're saying, you simply make the endeavor to fully absorb yourself. The nature of the process, it will make you conscious of these higher elements. And when you come to the point you are qualified, you are liberated, then Krishna, the spiritual master, or one of the Lord's intimate associates, eternal associates, will greet you and take you into the Lord's pastimes. Right? So that's how it's going to work. The other is that you have to follow all the rules and regulations of Raghunuga Bhakti. Right? Does that make sense? But did you understand the catch there? So that's the thing, is we're the ones that are the Vaidhiwalas, and we're depending upon mercy and all that and just being absorbed. We have knowledge, the more you have, the better. The others are saying, no, it's by the quality and technique of the endeavor, which is by definition Vaidhi. Right? So we're situating ourselves in the boat of Vaidhi Bhakti, in the mood of Raghunuga. And they're situating themselves supposedly in the boat of Raghunuga, in the mood of Vaidhi. Very, very amusing. The whole thing's very amusing. So here, automatic doesn't mean you sit back. That's the problem. Automatic in the modern culture is a concept dreamed up by very intelligent, again, business persons on how to get the Shudras to buy all of their machinery, you know, labor-saving devices, so that they can get them to work harder in their factories and offices, and they can get all their money back from them that they make. Very clever. Anybody who's ever washed dishes and anybody who's ever used a dishwasher knows that it's the same, if not more. Because you already have to practically wash the dish and put it in the dishwasher. Then if you don't immediately dry it, you're going to have spots all over it.
right? Plus, sometimes they break things. You know, so, you know, plus it takes up space, it uses electricity. You still have to put in the endeavor, plus pay the bill, which means you have to put in time outside to pay for it. And it needs to be fixed, right? It's not very often you have to go to a doctor to fix your arm, right? Or your fingers, right? But to fix your washing machine is probably a regular thing. Then you have the plumber, you know, like that. So it's all, it's a business thing. But it's looked so automatic, they make it that you don't have to do anything. You just put it in and that's it, finished, right? No, you have to get it, you have to rinse it, you already have to clean your drain anyway, you already have to make a mess in your sink. Then you have to put it in there, then you have to push the button, you have to put in the soap, you gotta then pay all the bills and anything and maintain it. You gotta take it out, you still gotta dry it, you still gotta stack it up. Right? You could say maybe a maid is automatic. Because she'll do it for you, yes?
Yeah,
I'm going to
ask you a question. Actually, I have a dishwasher in
the US. Oh, okay.
And I found it practical.
It can be. It means it's practical in that you can put it in and go away. You still have to put it in the same amount of time. But the point is you don't have to sit down and in one long stretch do the whole thing. But if you contemplate the endeavor that goes into it, it's not much different. It's just that you can put them in and then they push the button and then later on come back and put them away at your leisure. So you can take what you do in one place and stretch it out. But the point is that money to maintain it had to come from somewhere. So ultimately the labor is not saved. Because how much did it cost and how much did it cost to maintain? You have to go out and make that. Right? Yeah. No, I'm just saying it may be useful, but what I'm saying is the point of it being automatic is not there. You know, just like the washing machine is supposed to be automatic. You still have to collect the clothes. You still have to put them in there. You still have to do the things. You still have to put it into a dryer. You still have to iron them. What I'm saying is the automaticness, what it's sold on. The Western concept, if you say automatic, means you make no endeavor and it happens. But as advertisement, you're making the endeavor. My point I was trying to make is that endeavor is going into it. It's not automatic. It may be useful. That's another thing. Otherwise, why are they there? Right? Why are people buying them? But the point is it's not automatic from the concept of what the advertisement says. So in the same way, what Prabhupada is saying is the same. You make that endeavor, and then automatically you'll get the result. Does that make sense? But what's taken is some unscrupulous persons will take Prabhupada's point and say automatic means without endeavor. But as we mentioned in the beginning, Prabhupada knows what language is. So he actually knows what automatic is. He's not using a Western conditioned by modern advertising definition. Prabhupada doesn't care for those because they change day to day, you know, like that. The political correctness can change in a moment. One very prominent situation or, you know, activity can change the whole political field. You know, like from, you know, hell no, we won't go, to flag waving, you know, go out and nuke them till they glow Americans when the Twin Towers went down. One day. Like that. And for years, you know, one third of the houses, the whole Northeast, you know, had flags. They went to the endeavor to make a flag pole and hang it in cars with flags in the back windows. That means you probably, somebody's met some of the flags, right? But you probably didn't even see that, you know, back in World War II, you know, that many flags, you know? But it's like, It's phenomenal. And then now again, and it was great until Iraq. And then the people felt, well, that was a bit of an over-endeavor. Then again, back to the, pacifist, not in the war. This, you know what I'm saying? So Prabhupada doesn't really care for any of that. Because what today is there, even today it's there. After a while it goes away. You know, it's like, what is politically correct today, after 20 years, 50 years, it won't be. He's written these books for 10,000 years. 50 years is no big deal. A few unintelligent, not meaning academically, a few meaning they can't understand truth and fact, that kind of thing, who can't understand what he says because of their political conditioning. It's a loss, but it's minor compared to how many people benefit by it. And to change things for them, when after a few years, it doesn't, that they understand what he says. Plus, you have, how you say, the silent majority concept, that at least 80% of the people, they're fine with everything. It's only 20% jump up and down and yell and scream because they got email or something. But if you actually check, the people who are on email and representing the world represent themselves and maybe a couple of friends. Their circle is no bigger than a handful, factually. You know, it's just not. But by the nature of propaganda, one feels one is the world, right? I mean, the people who are saying this, you have to remember, back in the 60s, were there at Woodstock going, we are the world. And so the same people now are 50 years old, and they still think they're the world. A little more sophisticated, you know, okay, they shorten their, change their hairstyle. But still the same mentality of what they think the rest of the world thinks. And most people, it's not worth the effort to write an email. They don't have 6 hours a day, 3 hours, they don't even have half an hour a day for issues. Okay, send somebody, okay, I'm arriving this time, can you pick me up? Or, hey, this is a great deal. Or, you know, it's a memo. It was made by business people for memos. It wasn't made for philosophical discussions, right? The sages of Naimisharanya, they had down the process of philosophical discussion. It's called a sangha, right? But devotees, they don't like sanghas so much anymore because it takes too much time. Because, hey, I got to write emails, you know? So, does that make some sense? So we were emphasizing on the modern usage of automatic. The point wasn't to badmouth washing your machine. I mean, if you're getting good use out of it, it helps your service to Krishna. Hey, go for it. It's fine with me. I mean, that's not a problem. I was just saying is that the concept of automatic means you do no work. That's illusory. But it may be more convenient breaking the work up. Right? You know, you can do it at leisure, you know, like that. So that's fair enough. You know, it keeps your sink clean. All the dirty dishes are in the washing, I mean, the dishwasher, right? You know, like that. Okay. So then we'll end here, and then if there's any further questions, we'll go after. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Salamita Bhaktivinoda ki, trying to take over the thing. Yeah, it's always a difficulty when you're explaining something. Something gets the bad end of the deal. That's why it said, "What is in the Shastra, what is glorified or what is repeated, that's the main point. Because otherwise, something, you have to use something as an example. And that example may be, how you say,
make the thing look nice or may not look make the thing look nice. You know, like Prabhupada will take the same thing. I've seen him have a purport where he'll say, there's the Westerners and then there's the Indians. Right? And he's saying, and in India so many great personalities, and Vivekananda is on the list. Right? Because he's showing how the Indian method of, you know, base things kind of based on the scriptures is more effective than the Western, which is not. So even Vivekananda, Gandhi get on the list. Then when it comes to then proper Vedic and, you know, improper application of it, then Gandhi and Vivekananda go to the other side of the list. And then you have the proper followers of the Vedic literature. Then, when you're trying to establish, but of the Vedic, then the Vaishnav is the proper, then the Shankarites go on the other side, even though they're bona fide Vedic. Right? Like that. And then you get down to, then of the Vaishnavas, then Lord Chaitanya and his associates have something very unique to offer to the world. Like that. So like that. And then within the Gaudiyas, then you have the Apasampradayas, you know, Sahajas and all that. You know, so always that's the problem in the material world, because you're dealing with duality, something's always going to come. That's why in an explanation, then the example is always comes back, there must be a thesis. So we're not so used to speaking like that. The proper way of speaking is saying, this is the thesis you're saying. You know, automatic doesn't mean without endeavor. Right? And then you're saying, so endeavor has to be made for anything to work, but the result, then you're doing the right endeavor, then the result will be automatic, because Krishna said it and the Acharyas have said that. So that's the mercy. Right? That's the mercy you're talking about. Then we may give an example of the dishwasher. You know, so then it's already clear that it's the endeavor that's the point. It's not, you know, but if we're talking about advertisement and how we're being tricked by that, the illusion of the material of the Western culture, then you can bring it in, then you might be using it in that way, is that they trick you to that. It's not that anything's not useful. Probably we use planes, cars, machines, but at the same time as he had the same opinion is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur that the wheels of industry must be stopped. Right? It must be destroyed. But since it's there, we're using it in Krishna's service. But if it's not used for Krishna, then we generally avoid it. But because it's Krishna's anyway, it's Krishna's brain that the scientist used to come up with the item. And it's Krishna's brain that the business person saw the opportunity to manufacture and market it. Otherwise, someone's brain is there, you won't see it. Right? But unless someone applies it, like this guy, I don't know, who is it? What's the name of that? I don't know, I see them, I don't know, maybe they're all over, but I see them in England. It's a kind of vacuum cleaner. It doesn't use a bag. What is it? Dyson, yeah. So, still, you hoover the rug with your Dyson, at least in England. You know, but he's trying to get it that you'll Dyson the rug with your Dyson, or your Hoover, or whatever. Whatever. So he dreamed up how to make this thing because he hated emptying the bag. And so then he used his intelligence, dreamed up a machine. It took him 5,112, I think, prototypes to get it to what was marketable. Like that. So here he had someone that had the brain and the marketing ability. But you have to have both. You know, the intelligence and the endeavor. Like that. Otherwise, you have people that come up with great things, right? You know, so it's that whatever it is, that one guy, completely schizophrenic madman, but he had this unified theory that somehow or another some intelligent person used to run the stock market.
He never knew it was used like that because he was in the nut house. You know, sometime later, you know, I think he was 70, 80 years old or 90 years old. And then they came to him and he got a Nobel Prize because the whole, you know, modern economy is based on his mathematical theory. But it had nothing to do with him, the application. So, like that, we have to put them together. Is that okay? Like that. But that's, if that's there also, there's less misunderstanding. If you use the Vedic theory, it's called Panchanganyaya. That it makes it more clear. You state exactly what you want, you've got the essence, then you fill it out so it's clear, and then you start giving your examples and clearing doubts and everything like that. So that it works. That. Any question? Our endeavor is not enough. Means to achieve a result, you need to have a certain standard, and that standard is beyond your conditioned ability. Okay. The point is the real thing is the fullness of endeavor, right? With the body, with the mind, with the words. Words here meaning intelligence, right? Body, in other words, here, look at it, just to explain it. The body means the body and the false identity. Right? So that is the five gross elements and the false ego. Right? That's what is manifest from the mode of ignorance. Right? From the mode of passion, that's another, you know, that's intelligence and senses. Right. Of the senses, then no one can perceive what you are thinking, smelling, touching, you know, tasting like this. So it's only through the working senses you can tell something's going on. Of all of them, then the voice is the most clear what it is. Senses are managed by intelligence. Right? Because they discriminate between one thing and another, right? The nose discriminates between something, this smell and that smell, an orange or an apple. It's intelligence, right? So then, what you speak indicates what you're doing with your senses. Right? So if we say words, that means all your senses and your intelligence. And mind means then your values, what is important for you in the way of experience. Does that make sense? So when you say body, mind, and words, it's complete. Sometimes we don't think it's, you know, it's just that's one thing. Okay, we've got to get body, mind, and words, and we've got to chant around, so we've got to do this. No, body, mind, and words is the whole thing. So if the body, mind, and words are fully absorbed in an activity, that's the perfection. Right? Because from that will come the automatic result of prema. Because prema is what we're trying to get, not perfection of material perfection of service. You know what I'm saying? The perfection of material skill is not what we're trying to get. Does that make sense? But now think about it. You don't know how to ride a bicycle, you're walking down the path, and you can walk down the path without thinking. Right? You start to learn to ride a bicycle. Right? Can you think of anything else other than the bicycle, what you're doing? No. That's fully absorbed. So that's why we're always trying to improve the quality of our service, our skills, because then we're always fully absorbed. As soon as it becomes second, then either that's part of something bigger and we have to go to the bigger, or we have to upgrade what we're doing. Does that make sense? If what we're doing is the complete thing, then it has to become more and more refined. If that's a part of something else, then that's in place and then we have to see everything else is in place and then the bigger picture is evolving. So does that make some sense?
rules and evidence will obvious on this. There will further states will never.
Okay. Is the endeavor up to some external standard? The Vedas set external standards so that we can judge by, because being that this material world, you have to apply the intelligence, the mind, the ego on something, right? The mind is going to accept and reject. That means it has to have options, and there has to be a better option and a less better option, right? Intelligence has to discriminate between options, so there should be better and less best, though the mind still has to choose it. And the ego means then there also should be better options and less better options, right? It's better to be a devotee than a non-devotee. You know, being a devotee, it's better to be one that's, you know, seriously practicing than one that's not. You know, like that. But there's always got to be something. So standards are always there so that we have something that the body, the mind, and words can function with. Does that make sense? You have to have that. But now, the point is we do our best to get there, right? The standard is, a bridge is going to be made between Rameshwaram and Lanka, which, despite modern academics, is 800 miles away. Right? And you're taking across, you're not having a few people one at a time tiptoe across this bridge, holding their breath. You're taking an army across. And what is this army? Monkeys and bears and all kinds of, you know, is that one? Tigers, lions and tigers and bears. So, you understand? So you have to have something solid for them to go across, right? They're not known necessarily for their gracefulness. You know, when they walk, you know they walk. So it's a serious bridge. That's the standard. But it's not just strength that's implied. Otherwise, these monkeys are coming and carrying tops of mountains, right? Let us look at it. Top of a mountain. Top doesn't mean you go up and just break off a little tip. It means any serious mountain goes up to a certain point where there's trees. Beyond that, there's no trees. It's only rock. Right? In the West, I think trees stop at 12,000 feet. In the Himalayas, they stop about 16. Right? The mountains in the Himalayas, good mountains, go up into the 20s. So that means you have 4,000 to 5,000 feet of rock. That's what they're breaking off. The trees are all messy. It's all dirt. You just go up, break off the top of the mountain. It's clean. It's just a piece of rock. Break that off and fly away. You know, Hari Baba. Then you take that and you drop that into the ocean and it flows. Right? Does that make sense? Okay, so strength they've got. That's not a problem. But in that pastime, two major things come out. One is the rocks don't float unless they have Ram's name on them. Right? So, without the Lord's name, nothing happens. So the name is more important. It's the important element. The endeavor is to support your chanting of the name. Right? Okay? Second thing is that in some instances it's a spider, in some instances it's a squirrel. Then, they say, they are there also endeavoring. And to their ability, they're able to kick in some dust and sand on the, you know, on the beach there, into the water. So Hanuman, in both cases, comes by carrying one of those mountaintops we talked about, and tells the spider or squirrel to move out of the way. Because he's doing big service, and this one's doing small service. So Ramachandra notes that. And says, in my mind, they're both the same because you're both endeavoring. If you don't pick up the top of the mountain, you're not doing anything.
And for them, kicking in a few grains of dust or sand is all they can do. Does that make sense? So the endeavor is what the Lord sees. So that full absorption in your service, that's what you're looking for. But just because you're doing it, it's the sentiment, you don't stop there. This is also a very modern approach. It's, you take the aspect of, you're trying to show the kindness and the mercy and being broad-minded at the expense of devotional service by, it's good enough, rather than, okay, it's good enough this second, but what about tomorrow? But actually we're looking at, maybe it was good enough 10 years ago, but maybe today it's not. Right? You know what I'm saying? Is the person is becoming very sophisticated in their personal lifestyle, but their skills in Krishna consciousness are no different from the day they walked in. Right? So, like this, as you have to see, is that the angles of vision, because they can be seen transcendentally or materially, or how you say, demoniacally. You know what I'm saying? In other words, you take mercy. What is mercy? Mercy means it's applied on an individual, that that individual is benefited when they would have not been benefited. Mercy doesn't mean that by supposedly being kind to that individual, so many other people suffer. That's not mercy. That's sentiment. You know what I'm saying? That's why the Vedas have standards. Means everyone has their rights, and their rights cannot impinge on anyone else. Does that make sense? As soon as it does, it's not religious. It's not moral. It's sinful. So in the name of modern mercy and morality and on and on and on, then many times devotees will misapply these eternal Vedic principles according in the mundane, politically correct way that completely makes them laughing stock out of Krishna consciousness. Makes it a joke. It has nothing to do with Krishna consciousness. And you can judge by the result. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that the standards are there for everything. What is mercy? Just like charity, what is charity? Charity means something that you have gained by your endeavor. You give the results of that to someone else who doesn't have it. Right? That's charity. Right? Do you have a modern definition like that? I doubt it. It'll only be connected to money. Right? So now, then the difficulty comes, is therefore the person that's conditioned in that concept of charity cannot understand that giving people Krishna conscious benefit, or let's say a lower level, giving them knowledge, you know, transcendental knowledge, is the highest of charity. And if you give them, you know, that's of what you can get in the material sphere. And if you give them transcendence, that's the highest you can give in the cosmic creation. So the Brahman has studied, he has gotten that knowledge by endeavor, and it has become fact. He is giving that to others. That's the best charity. You can't get better than that. Right? That's not seen as charity. Not in our society. You understand? Because we're not following the Vedic standards. You know what I'm saying? And prasad distribution is also charity in that you're giving Krishna consciousness, you're giving agyata sukriti. You give them prasad, which is Krishna, you are benefiting them. Right? But rather than projecting that, we project we're doing mundane welfare work to please a few journalists and a few others like that. The rest of the world's not looking to us to do that. Right? They look to the Hare Krishnas for answers. Who are we? Who is God? Who is the soul? You go to the others for food. Right? You come to the Hare Krishnas for knowledge. Right? No one says other religions have the answers. People say we have answers. Right? So that's the best charity we can do. Giving knowledge, giving devotion, giving this agyata sukriti. Right? So charity work, welfare work takes on a whole different thing. Having a Ratha Yatra, that's welfare work, because everybody gets to see Jagannath. Right? They don't know what's going on, but they see it, they hear the name, doing Hari Nam, that's welfare work. Book distribution, that's welfare work. Like that, you know, having radio programs and distributing, you know, transcendental sound vibration, you know, and CDs and stuff. That's welfare work. But devotees don't see it as welfare work. So that's why you have to have a Vedic standard. Otherwise, then you have misunderstandings, misgivings. Right? So if you take that, then it's very obvious. Doing these things are fine. But from the right standard. Right? Prabhupada in Upadeshamrita describes book distribution. You're going out, you're giving someone transcendental knowledge, them being pleased with it are giving you a dakshin. It's not business. Right? It's the dati pratigrihati. You're giving something, they're reciprocating. They don't have knowledge, you have knowledge, they have money. You work, you have knowledge. They work, they have money. You give the knowledge, they give money. You know, it's a reciprocation. Does that make sense? Just like somebody does something nice for us, what are we going to do? Return money? No, we'll go to the house, give prasad, do a kirtan, give a lecture. That's what we have. That's what we give to the student. They have money. Money is what's valuable to them. They like what you're doing, they give you money. We like what you're doing, we give you Krishna consciousness. Right? Does that make sense? So the standard has to be there. Then everything makes sense. But the standard is for Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, then it also is misaligned, you know. It may be Vedic, but if it's not enhancing Krishna consciousness, what's the use? Okay, it's a better, you know, a thousand times better, what's the use, than a modern, non-Vedic, what's the use? But still, it's useless. Right? You know what I'm saying? Like, you look in your closet, and you'll have some probably really valuable, useless things in there that people have given your stuff. And because it's valuable, you don't throw it away, right? The cheap ones, you know, you've thrown away. The valuable ones you have. Still useless. So, does that make any sense? So standard is there. We make the endeavor to attain that standard. And if we're fully absorbed, then the results up to Krishna. I mean, otherwise, how do you have a bunch of hippies, right? These people spend their time
listening to the Beatles. The last thing that you would expect is for them to meet the Beatles, let alone live with the Beatles, let alone be maintained by the Beatles, let alone have the Beatles invite you into their house and listen to you discuss philosophy, let alone come over to where you're staying and sing along with your kirtan. Right? There's people that are scheming and this and that, you know, that are trying to meet them, can't. Big producers, this, that, can't. Celebrities, can't. Handful of hippies walk over there, knock on the door, say, Hari Bol, explain the philosophy, and hey, they're staying in the guest house because they're building the temple. And so, oh, hey, you can stay with us. They've made that full endeavor, and the result is beyond anything with the best mundane skill could do. So that's the point. If that endeavor is made, amazing things will happen. Skill is not the devotee who relies on their skill only. It's actually devotional service in the mode of ignorance, because they're proud of their material skill. Kapila Muni describes this. Someone who's very proud of their previous qualification and skill, therefore feels they're better than someone else. Like, you know, they have an academic degree or some particular, you know, technical skill, or that therefore they're better than other devotees. They can be a better devotee than others because they can use this in Krishna service. No, they're an academic. They use their academics for Krishna. You're not an academic. You use whatever is not academic. Does that make some sense? So that's the thing, is that simultaneously you have the standard, you're endeavoring for that, you're using your straining your intelligence to its maximum to get the good result for Krishna. You know, you're endeavoring the best you can for Krishna. And then what comes, that you leave up to Krishna. If your ego is not there, you may have some amazing results. And if your ego is there, you may get nothing. I mean, you can ask anyone who's been around and watched new devotees joining. Sometimes it's not uncommon that you have somebody who's materially extremely qualified, doesn't even make it as a new devotee because everything doesn't work for them. Nothing works for them because of their pride. They just have to, you know, stay away because their ego can't handle it, that they can't come in and what these simple, you know, wallahs that have been scraped out of the gutter are able to do, they as, you know, qualified, you know, upstanding people, intelligent, can't. It doesn't make sense in their world because they can't accept the transcendental, that Krishna is result. Does that make sense? Okay. Yes. Where are we going if we make the right endeavor?
At the time of death, we don't remember Krishna.
Say, and at the time of what?
Yeah. Our death.
Uh-huh. Okay, you're making a full endeavor, but at the time of death, you don't remember Krishna. Do you have an example of this? Or this is a mental speculation? Yeah, so don't speculate. The point is like this. Death means insecurity, right? Generally. It means you have a situation in which a known situation is going to be lost. Right? That's death. Right? Because other things are fearful, but this is the most because you lose everything. Everything you identified as yourself. You know, your body, the family, where you're from, your money, your position, your fame, your beauty, everything goes. Right? So, what do you do at that time?
you're going to take shelter of something that you think... You were going to say something? You're going to take shelter of something that is going to give you some solace and possibly even help you. Right? So whatever was important to you in your life, you're going to start going through them really fast. You know, you start getting the most quickest, slideshow on earth, you know. In nanoseconds, your whole life has gone through, and anything important, anything that was significant in your life is going to flash in front of you. And what is important to you, you're going to latch onto that. So if your life is spent in Krishna consciousness, and that's what's important for you, why at the time of death you wouldn't remember Krishna? You know? Because otherwise you don't want to fall into the trap that other religionists fall into. Right? They have two, you know, eternal traps that they intellectually fall into. Oh, actually, yeah, no, there's more. This one group, it's actually two groups. Well, let's say it's a whole group. The Judeo-Christian group is how many angels can dance on the head of a pin? And that's been keeping theologians busy for hundreds of years. Right? Then you get, the impersonalists. No, the Buddhists. They have two. What's the sound of one hand clapping? Or if a tree falls in the forest and no one is there to hear, did it make any sound? And you go on, but what if someone was there to hear, but he was deaf? Would it still make the sound? Because the tree doesn't know he's deaf, so. You know, do cows walk around on two legs when no one's watching? When people come, they get down on all fours. Right? You know, the guy in Far Side thinks that's what they do. You know, or another one, famous one, is which came first, the chicken or the egg? Right? So the Vedas don't bother with them. All these things they have answers. Which came first, the chicken or the egg? The chicken. Because you don't get an egg without a chicken. And you say, where did the chicken come from? The chicken came from the human. So, answered. Right? One hand clapping. Prabhupada says, yes, one hand makes sound. When you slap the Mayavadi in the face, that's the sound of one hand clapping. So, you know, like this, so don't get into speculating on things that aren't really important in Krishna consciousness. What if? You know, what if I make all this endeavor and it doesn't? What if you do? And in any case, you spend the whole life absorbed in Maya. At the time of death, you won't remember Krishna. And if I spend my whole life absorbed in Krishna, at the time of death I have a chance I could remember, but according to the speculation, I also might not. Therefore, which of the two would be better? Better to endeavor because at least there's a chance. Well, the other one, there's no chance. So that's the point. So then close, and then you just make the endeavor. Don't let the mind trick you. Speculation. Speculation is a material process that's useful in Krishna consciousness if you're using it to apply what you've heard to what you see. You understand? In bringing shabda, or authority, down to pratyaksha, what's perceivable, the process you use is mental speculation. Right? The last six chapters of Gita have shown you the proper Vaishnav process of mental speculation. Therefore, it's not called mental speculation, it's called Buddhi Yoga. Right? Because you are contemplating the truth, so it hasn't become real for you yet. So you're taking it this way, that way, and seeing something, so it's speculation. But it's based on reality. Therefore, it's not called speculation. Does that make sense? So that's why the process that the Mayavadis use and we use to free ourselves from material entanglement are the same. But because they only use it to get out of the material world and not go back to Godhead, it's called mental speculation. And for the devotee, it's called jnana yoga. Does that make sense? Because your knowledge is connecting you to the Supreme. And then if you apply that along with endeavor or application of that knowledge, then that becomes buddhi yoga. So that's best. Is that okay? Yeah. So, you know, these kind of things are, there's tons of them. I can't remember them, but there's a lot of those kind of yes. You had something over there? Yeah. Is the difference between paravidya and aparavidya a matter of perception? Okay. Are they synonymous? You said aparavidya and avidya. Is it a matter of perception or is it a matter of are they synonymous? It's both. Technically speaking, how do you say? Means this is the point where we have the overlap, the sandhya, between things. That's where it gets cloudy. It's not as clear, right? You know, black is very clear, white's very clear, gray is a problem. You know? So then transcendental knowledge means it's directly about the Lord and His devotees, you know, in described in a favorable way, right? According to Rupa Goswami's definition of bhakti. That's transcendental knowledge. Aparavidya means it is in pursuit of transcendence, but it's material knowledge. Does that make sense? Like you take astrology. Or let's say, more easily, astronomy. So astronomy is material knowledge, but you're using it to establish when is Ekadasi so you can follow it to please Krishna, when is Janmashtami so you can follow it to please Krishna. Then it's aparavidya. It becomes avidya when you just look at it for auspicious time to start your business, and your business has nothing to do with Krishna. Then it's avidya. So the difference between aparavidya and avidya is whether it's connected to the Lord or not. So even, let's say, car mechanics, if it's connected with fixing Krishna's cars so that they can go out in sankirtan, then it becomes aparavidya. Right? But if it's not, it's avidya. So generally speaking, the Western knowledge by default is avidya. Because it was not designed to think about God, and not at least for the last, you know, 300-400 years since the quote-unquote enlightenment, when people became unenlightened, or they enlightened themselves of the burden of, you know, God consciousness, you know, like that. So then, I have to say. Yeah, so by default it's that. But by the process of Krishna consciousness, it can be engaged in the Lord's service, then it becomes aparavidya. The Vedic knowledge was designed to be engaged in Krishna's service. So by default it's aparavidya. So the Vedic knowledge is all automatically aparavidya. But because of the perception of the individual, they may not use it in connection with Krishna. Therefore it's avidya. But it's better quality avidya than the Western avidya, the non-Vedic avidya. But it's still avidya. So therefore, Western knowledge that's been connected to Krishna will be better than Vedic knowledge not connected to Krishna. But Vedic knowledge connected to Krishna will be better than non-Vedic connected to Krishna. As far as tools. Devotion, that's another category. you know, how well you're using that knowledge in Krishna's service, that's the individual's devotion. That's a separate category. So one may be using Western things with more devotion than someone using Vedic with less devotion, or vice versa. Does that make some sense? So the perception is, do you see it in connection to Krishna or not? That makes it avidya or aparavidya. Right? But by definition, the Vedic knowledge is all meant to be used for Krishna, because in the invocations for the Vedic knowledge, it all talks about the Lord. Well, the Western by nature is not. You have to work harder to find the connections. The Vedic is it's a reflection. So the connection between the Vedic and the spiritual is seamless. But you have to have truth and work with it till you get it to fact. Then you can see the direct connection. That this application and this branch of Vedic knowledge is actually this application is a reflection of this application of devotional service. But generally you can see that it's different, but they're the same. Does that make sense? Is there any link between aparavidya and mixed devotional service, paravidya, and pure devotional service? Again, both yes and no. Because if one's consciousness, or let's say one's activities, are simply absorbed... No, let's see. Let's say, okay, by nature, someone who is absorbed just in paravidya, that's all they do, generally will be on the pure platform, right? Or the pure unalloyed platform. All they do is chant, associate with devotees, you know, hear Bhagavatam, worship the deity, live in the Dham. So they're following Bhagavad. So it's just pure Bhagavad, then one would be transcendental. The Vedic or the Apara, then, depending upon the consciousness, if you're engaging in Krishna's service, then to that degree you're engaging, to that degree you're pure. So you may be engaging in Krishna's service, but it's from the platform of Sakam. So it may not be pure, but it's still devotional service. It's mixed. Well, Nishkam generally isn't classified as a mixed devotional service. Right? So it just depends upon where your property is, you know, where your value is, where, what you consider yours. Is the knowledge what's important? If it is, then it's jnana yoga. So then it's mixed. But if it's pleasing Krishna, so therefore I should know what I'm doing, because Krishna told us to do that in Gita, therefore I'm enlightening myself as to the techniques of devotional service. And with the knowledge of that technique, then applied with the knowledge of the devotional process, you know, then I make that endeavor to please Krishna. Then that's Buddha Yoga, so that's not mixed, that's pure devotional service. Does that make sense? So within the neophyte platform, you'll get mixed devotional service. So what's connected to Krishna will be aparavidya. Or paravidya, when they're chanting, doing direct devotional service, when they're doing things that are more connected with their, social, economic life, or religious life, that would be where the question of avidya or aparavidya comes in. Because Bhagavat and Pancharatra are transcendental. Like that. So aparavidya could be used or could not be used. That which is used is is aparavidya. That which is not used is avidya. You know, but the madhyama is working on the platform of naishkarmya. So whatever he's doing, or let's say the majority of what he will be doing will all be aparavidya or prerogative. And because he's not, how you say, 100%, he hasn't perfected himself, therefore to that degree it's not perfected, that degree will be avidya. Or, let's say, not, it may be paravidya. Let's say, probably more likely you would say, it would be aparavidya, but the consciousness hasn't reached the best platform. So generally avidya is dealt with by the neophytes. I mean, non-devotees, all they do is avidya. But does that make sense? So that's why it's a very tricky thing using any branch of knowledge, Vedic or non-Vedic, in the devotional process. Because by words, it's easy to do. You can just say one's doing it. But to actually be able to technically describe how one is doing it, that might be hard to come by. One can say what's doing it. So that's what one is trying to do. Whatever is the fields that you are fully absorbed in, you should see that those fields are connected to Krishna. Right? Because everything the things that you're not fully absorbed in, save for after you've gotten the other ones, unless they just come up, naturally. Let's say money is important for you. Therefore, you're generating money, maintaining money, spending money, donating money. You should see everything down to the last detail is connected to Krishna. Then after that, then once you've done that, because that's your most valuable thing, then it'll be very easy to let's look at, maybe how you live in your house or your clothes, like that. Those will come easy. So the place to focus is where your values lie, and therefore where is your natural endeavor, or your specific service that you have, those things. Focus there and try to get that is properly connected. Does that make some sense? Then everything else will come. Because someone will be saying, this aspect is very important, but that's according to their conditioned nature. Someone else's conditioned nature is different. And that doesn't mean anything to them. Like to some people, aesthetics mean absolutely nothing. Something else means something to them. So for them to try to engage aesthetics in Lord's service would be difficult because they don't have it. But they have something else. They're probably very practical persons. So therefore, seeing that they do everything very practically and they make Krishna's service very practical, that it gets the result, they can do it. Then after a while, you might be able to show them the difference between, that they, put down, their toolbox, in the middle of the temple room when they could have put it maybe, out where you put your shoes, simply because it doesn't look so good, and you're going to do the work in the temple room, so therefore you only need two tools. Take the two tools, leave the box outside. You might be able to convince them that if they've got there, all these things practically already engaged, then they can see, oh, it's for Krishna. Okay, so Krishna doesn't like looking at my box. Okay, it is a bit beat up, it is pretty greasy, it is pretty funky, it makes a lot of noise. Okay, I can understand, I'll keep it outside. But it'll come from, the one will come from the other. Does that make sense? Okay. Yeah, one second. Whether we are endeavoring enough or not enough, that everything basically balances. In other words, it's sustainable. Right? That's one aspect to look at. It means at a festival or some unique, emergency service or festival, then we will be making basically an over-endeavor. But that's normal. So we should be doing that much. But on a regular basis, we should see that what we're doing balances in our life, that everything that we're doing, in other words, our work and our recreation, are balanced.
You know? It means that how much time you need for rest, how much time you need for whatever it is that keeps you balanced in Krishna consciousness that you're doing. You know? And the endeavor that you make doesn't reduce your Krishna consciousness. It should be based on the standards given, you know, in the scriptures, and if there's any doubt, then advice or consultation with others, you know, that one may be not endeavoring because one's lazy, or one may be over-endeavoring because one's hyperactive, you know, so one would have to just see that there's a proper, or one may be endeavoring in something that's not as important as the other one's priorities may not be quite balanced. So then one tries to, you know, understand, look at each thing that one does and see how much time do you need to sleep, how much time do you need for japa, and then there's a temple program, and then you have your service and that, okay, and then what doesn't work, then you have to pick priorities, or you have to start upgrading. You know, instead of chanting 10-minute rounds, you should be endeavoring to chant 5-minute rounds. You know, Prabhupada recommended 5, not 10. You know, or, you know what I'm saying? Or maybe instead of taking an hour to take a bath, try to take 45 minutes or half an hour. You know what I'm saying? So there could be things of that, unless somehow or another your bath is the most important thing for you, that's where you unwind and all your greatest thoughts and everything. Okay, then less time. Eat for less time. Do something else less. Try to balance it. You know what I'm saying? So what really is important for you, then those things you try to see that they're in place and they're properly engaged, and then fit everything around it and make sure that Krishna is the center of it. Is that okay? Yeah. You have a question? Whether it's Oh yeah, Prabhupada answered that also. Prabhupada said, God can create a mountain that he can't, that's so big he can't lift it, and then the next moment he'll lift it. Yeah. That's all these, you know, it's like, these things go down great, you know, sitting around with friends over a few beers, you know, it's like, you know, that's where these things go on, you know, the great modern intellectuals, you know. Like that. Rabindra Shroop was saying, he knows guys down at the university that they go to the pub, drinking beer, and they're discussing technical points in Sanskrit on what Jiva Goswami was meaning in one of his sandarbhas. And they're getting each other's opinions, you know. Well, he says here in the context this, so I think it means that. The other guy, no, but I feel it. He says it goes on. Yeah. So that's okay, but they have to. They have attained their spiritual form, yes. You weren't convinced about it. Oh. No, see, it's, you go into, going into Bhoma Leela, then that is what we would call Brahma-Bhuta platform. Right? Where you're liberated from the material conditioning. So to go into the Leela, since you're in the Leela now, then you have to have a form. But you don't have a conditioned nature, so your conditioned mind won't generate a conditioned form. You understand? You have a purified mind, or a transcendental mind, so it will generate a spiritual form. Does that make sense? So going into the Bhoma Leela, you automatically will have a form made out of Satchitananda. But you're still Tathasta.
you still have to make that endeavor to develop prema for Krishna. So having the spiritual form doesn't mean that you have prema. It just means you're on the platform of Baba. Right? So that is the process that we see going through in the Krishna book. Is you're taking devotees, specifically it focuses on the gopis. Right? So you have them coming from different groups, down from the demigods, personified Vedas, and the rishis. So that budding affection or attraction or attachment to Krishna is there. It hasn't matured into prema. So they have a spiritual form. In that form, then they render service. But we see if the attachment isn't complete, then they don't make that complete endeavor. They'll be distracted by the spiritual variety. Does that make sense? So that's the tatastha platform. You know, here it's more gross, the tatastha platform, where you have the jiva, which is spiritual, and you have the body, which is material. So the potency that keeps the two of them together, that's the tatastha shakti. So in the same realm is the Boma Lila has that aspect of tatastha, in that you have a jiva there who doesn't have affection for the spiritual material world, but doesn't have prema for Krishna. Right? So in the beginning, not having that prema, we made the mistake and become attracted by the material world. But now going back, we're not going to make that mistake, because Krishna says, what's going there, you won't return. Because now you know prema and you know the material world is bad, so you're just going to continue. Though you might still get distracted. So one has to be focused. That's why the more one advances here, the less problem one may run into there of being distracted. Does that make sense? So it is a spiritual form. Those ones, they're conditioned. Those living entities that see Krishna but aren't, they're conditioned. When we say the Leela, we mean the associates. Like that. You know, we don't mean the demons and stuff like that. So the residents of Vrindavan, they're in the Boma Leela. Means Dhanakasura also crashes the party. But Dhanakasura is, that pastime is for the benefit of devotees. Dhanakasura gets benefit also. You know, by being touched by the Lord, he becomes liberated. So he is benefited. Anything to do with Krishna is good. So he's liberated. But it's specifically done for the devotees. Like that. So then it increases their attachment to Krishna and everything. Is that okay? So there's a distinguishing element there. In other words, those who are born in Vrindavan, like that, Dhanakasura wasn't born in Vrindavan. Like that. Or those who are born in Dwarka or in Ayodhya or in... Does that make sense? So then they're part of that. That's Boma Lila. And last, this is... You answer? Because we should kind of finish up here. What's your question? Kshatriyas are in the mode of passion. Okay, and what's your question? Okay. Kshatriya, it's like this. You want to cut sabji for Krishna. What will you use? A knife. Is the knife transcendental? No. Okay. Now, what? Now, by cutting the sabji, what is happening?
Service, okay. But you are creating items for cooking. So that's passion. At the same time, you're destroying the previous form of the vegetable. Right? Does that make sense? At the same time, one is doing it in a clean environment. Right? That's goodness. So when you're in the material world, you only have the material modes to work with. But the difference is the devotees engage the modes. The materialist is engaged by the modes. It's who's using who. The devotees use the modes to serve Krishna. The modes engage the living entity in mind. Does that make sense? Sure. It means, point is, so Arjuna sees Subhadra and he gets very attracted. Okay. And he's transcendental. Subhadra is also attracted to him. Arjuna I think it is. Who is it? Ramananda Rai, isn't it? Arjuna? Ramananda Rai is Vishakha. That means of the internal potency on the female side, it's the element of like Sundini. Sundini. There's Ladini, but it's like the Sundini kind of flavor. Sandini is a motive with reflection of the mode of ignorance. The mode of ignorance of the Lord is Shiva. Right? Subhadra is Yogamaya, who reflects as Mahamaya, who's married to Shiva. Make sense? In other words, they're naturally eternal. They are consorts. You understand? Because she's connected to Shiva, he has that particular flavor. But that's only Yogamaya here. Because Arjuna is a manifestation of that particular personality here. You know what I'm saying? Arjuna, you don't find Arjuna in Goloka. You only find Arjuna in Gokula. Right? So in the same way, it's still be connected here. But in the spiritual world, then you don't see that. In Vrindavan, Yogamaya, the husband's known is there, but it's not there. You don't see. You know, she's married to Sandipani Muni, but at the same time as her husband Shiva. So there's very, very subtle things, because it's not important. Here, because they're establishing religious principles and this and that, there she's just taking part in arranging. Okay? We'll end here. No, she didn't. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samavedhāva Bhaktivedanta ki, Jainatai Gaurava Fevedanta ki. Good to see you back.